This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. Thrilled today to be joined by a fascinating thinker on primary care and rural healthcare and so many of the challenges we're facing today. We're joined today by Thomas Campanella. And Thomas, which I don't know if he's related to Roy or not, but we'll ask him separately, is an executive in residence at Baldwin Wallace. And he'll tell us about that. It'll tell us what he's seeing in primary care and rural healthcare and more. Thomas, can you take a moment and introduce yourself?
Yes, thank you, Scott. And I'm very excited to be on this podcast. I have actually been involved with healthcare in diverse sectors for over 40 years from the provider side. I was associate dean of a medical school, Ohio University, osteopathic in rural Ohio, where a main focus was family medicine physicians, and it was in very rural Ohio. So that initially ignited my fire to primary care and rural health care. But I was also, like I said, a vice president of healthcare finance for Blue Cross of Ohio. So I saw things from the payer perspective. I have a background, I'm both a lawyer and a financial person, an economist. So I was able to see healthcare from different sides. I set up my own consulting company, UpCounsel, and healthcare law. So I really looked at it from different perspectives. And I've also been both a professor of health policy and health economics for Baldwin Wallace University, and now their healthcare executive in residence. So I write a lot on these subjects and others in healthcare. It's a combination of some of it is educational, and some of it I think I'm just venting because I get so frustrated.
No, thank you. And talk for a second about what are the issues that you're following the most closely currently? Because you followed a lot of different issues over the course of your career. What are you most focused on right now?
Well, they're really tied together. One is we keep talking about wanting to get into value-based care, evolving from a sick care system to a health system. And the real key to that are primary care and family medicine physicians. And we continue to have a shortage, and it's really increasing in that arena. So that's been one of my areas. The other area is rural health care, as I said, from the experience, because I was involved in rural health care over 20 years ago. And I recently went back to that region and in some really poor rural health areas. And I'm finding, you know, yes, there's been a lot done, but there's so much more. So we talk about healthcare in the inner cities and others, which we need to address, but we forget that 80% of our counties are rural and we're really not addressing that. And one of the key areas in rural healthcare is primary care. So it's tied to that. And then finally, just the financial side of it all, how we pay for healthcare. And that's really tied and has a negative impact on both rural healthcare and primary care because of the fee-for-service system.
And let me ask you this question. They say that to really move towards the value-based care system, population health system, we need 200,000 more primary care physicians or some number like that. And we know that we only produce 18,000 doctors a year or something like that. We got 18,000 retiring a year. So we're so far away from those numbers. How do we solve for some of that? How do we solve for some of that when these numbers are just daunting? 330 million people, 1,060,000 doctors, as many retiring as starting a year. How do we solve for some of these problems, Tom?
Well, first of all, Scott, there really isn't a silver bullet answer, you know, one answer that addresses all of this. But you can, I think, have a positive impact on that. I think it starts with, going through and paying the primary care physician much more than they're getting and really paying them for the value they provided. And a lot of that is through different payment methodologies other than fee-for-service, which just really rewards the more you do. And something like capitation, which is a per-member, per-month payment methodology that really pays physicians, in effect, in this case, primary care, keeping people healthy. If they can make more money in keeping people healthy, it's a win-win. And if we, especially hospital systems, start valuing primary care, the combination of paying more for primary care services and valuing those services much more, I think will also incent many more medical students to go down that path. But it's not a short-term fix, but we just can't sit by and just allow it to occur, this long-term negative trend.
You know, 100%, but it seems like there's not an easy fix. If we're talking about 18,000 physicians a year, of which 5,000-6,000 are maybe primary care physicians, it seems like we're so far from solving these problems, and there's just not enough residency spots. I mean, do we move towards just a much more leveraged system where we're relying on PAs, CRNAs, everything else? You know, CRNAs, at least in anesthesia, are solving a large problem. What do you see here? Or is the answer just we're not just going to have enough doctors?
Yeah, I agree that there is definitely a role, nurse practitioners, PAs, and others in that, as well as some things like telemedicine. But what I don't want is that being the quick fix answer and then basically forgetting about the overall value that a primary care doc brings. So yes, you need to continue to focus on areas like telehealth. You need to continue to focus on ramping up nurse practitioners and expanding their scope. But at the same time, what we're finding more and more as our healthcare system becomes so much more fragmented, where we have more specialists subspecializing in their various niches, it really has become a maze. And one of the key roles of a primary care family medicine physician is really being an advocate for the patient. And that needs to be ramped up even more. So yes, we need to have other fixes out there, but we can't neglect and we can fix and it can be done. You know, we need to have almost like a Marshall Plan, as they did in after World War II with Germany, but we need almost like a Marshall Plan, starting with the federal government, focusing on primary care and family medicine.
But your point is so well taken. To find the right specialist today is exactly a maze. You almost have to know somebody. And in the old days, the person you had to know was your local primary care physician. Now you got to know a leadership executive in a system or another physician or another specialist. And it's often not even your own doctor you know to get the advice on who to see. And it really is a maze as these become more subspecialized. No, you're absolutely right. And your point is really well taken, because without a true Marshall-type plan, a real investment in this, we're never going anywhere near what you're talking about. It's just too daunting, and there's just too many people compared to the number of doctors we have. And when I look at some of these nations like China and India that got way behind in the ratio of population to doctors, it might seem good from a distance, but in actual reality, it's a debacle. I mean, you just have a situation where China, example, in the COVID era, basically had to shut down entirely because they couldn't afford to have people get sick because there just wasn't enough doctors. In India, it was just in a horrible, horrible situation. When you get that ratio out of bounds, and there's times when I hear you talk and I hear this discussion, that we're headed in that direction where our ratio of doctors to patients just gets so bad. And people talk about technology fixes and other fixes, but what you're talking about, a Marshall Plan for physicians, I think is right on, but it seems so hard to do in today's political climate.
No, and I agree with you, and you're right. I mean, on the other hand, you know, going back to, for an example, we know in this political climate, there's issues, you know, rural against urban and all those types of things. But think about it. In rural America, which is, again, 80% of our counties, and they may have political leanings in one direction or another, but the shortage of primary care doctors is impacting them in such a degree, even more than many ways hospitals, in that you're in a position where it's not only impacting their overall health status, but their overall quality of life. So you would think legislators in that representing rural America, rural states, as well as obviously the urban issues there is some commonality there. It's just, you're right, the political side is a challenge, but we can't again give up. And I think the other part of it is, where are the employers in all this? Where are the employer coalitions? And I know they're involved, but I think they have the power. They pay for healthcare. And if ultimately a family medicine or a primary care doc can keep their employees healthy, can keep their employees more productive, can address absenteeism and family issues and things like that, it really should be something that employers should be much more of an advocate of too.
I think you're right. It just has become so hard for the employers to deal with this because they deal through it through the funnels of the big insurance companies. And there's just so much that the companies are trying to do in their own core competencies to try and figure this out. And maybe you say, well, healthcare for their employees, maybe it should be their core competency, which is, of course, how Kaiser developed originally from Kaiser Steel. But it seems really challenging. But we'll see how it plays out. Let me ask you a different question. You've had this great career, Thomas. Fascinating. What advice do you give to emerging leaders or to people trying to have careers that they – I mean, you love what you do. You're constantly thinking. You're thriving. What advice do you give to people trying to have great careers or to be great leaders?
Well, first of all, I'm 74 years old, and God willing, I'm writing, speaking at conferences, doing other things, and I want to be out there at 94 years old. But that just doesn't happen. So part of it is investing in yourself. So I think that's one of the key messages with everyone. And some of that's educational, some of it is in different areas. The other part, and the analogy I always use, Scott, is look at yourself as a puzzle piece. You are impacted by a lot of other puzzle pieces. And if we're talking healthcare, you could be working in a hospital setting, you could be working in other areas, but your organization or you individually or that are impacted about what's happening in the payer sector, employer sector, health policy, payment methodologies and that. And I think the more you understand how those puzzle pieces fit together and impact both you individually, your career, but also your organization, I think you have that much more value for yourself from a career goal. You identify opportunities and challenges, but more importantly, you become that much more valuable to your organization.
And so what's the trick? I mean, you sound 44 with the wisdom of a 74-year-old. What's the trick to staying so energized at 74? Because you sound fantastic and healthy and just in the middle of your groove, and it's really a fantastic and inspiring thing. What's the trick?
Well, as I read your bio, I hear yours is golf and tennis, and actually mine is golf and tennis too. But no, some of it is really both the physical and the mental side. And you have to, what you do physically in your 20s, 30s, and 40s impact those other years. So you need to, right at the beginning, recognize that when you invest in yourself, it's invested in your health too, because that means so much. And that impacts you, obviously, from a career standpoint. And then the other part is being curious, asking questions. Even as a professor, I never knew again when I was the professor or the student, because you can learn so much. And so having that curiosity and trying to understand, challenging yourself in that, I think is a real key to success and hopefully both physical and mental longevity.
But this point that you make on many people try and play catch up later, and at that point, you've made your job for physical and mental health so much harder if you don't mind to it all the way through your 20s, 30s, and 40s. Isn't that the truest thing?
Oh, yeah. As I tell people, more specifically on what I just said earlier, what you do in your 20s affects your 30s. What you do in your 30s affects your 40s and 50s. And as you said, you can't say at the age of 50, all of a sudden, all those issues physically or others, I'm going to try to address. It becomes not only more difficult, but almost impossible to be able to address. Well, it's the same thing too in regards to the mental health and educational part. You sort of feed off of it. It's sort of a domino effect. So you got to be, address that hunger. You got to believe in yourself. You have to have some of that self-confidence that says, I believe and I think I can be, have a positive impact, but also recognize to be able to do that, I got to even, continue to learn and understand. And you got to, be willing to hear from different perspectives. And I think that's the other important part. I just wished our politicians were able to do that too, because as you know, that's the big issue in politics. Everybody sort of narrowly focuses on media that supports what they say. They don't want to talk about it or whatever, and they stay siloed, and we don't have that free exchange of ideas and perspectives.
No, it's so true. I mean, our politics has gotten horrible. It just is incredible, and the cable, the networks, the social media, everything is so directed towards everybody's confirmatory bias. They just want to hear what their team wants to say. It's become like, it's like cheering for my Chicago Bears. I just want to cheer for them. That's how people have come with their political parties, whether your party's right or wrong. They just want to cheer for them like it's a sports team, and it's become literally a crazy, crazy, insane situation. Thomas, I can't even tell you what a pleasure it is to visit with you. I hope we'll have you back on for many years leading up to 94 and longer. It's really great to visit with you. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Becker's Healthcare Podcast.
Thank you, Scott. I really appreciate it.